that Los Angeles sunshine coming through.
Please stand by. Prime Video and Westworld director Jonathan Nolan invite you to Fallout.
After 200 years, we don't know much about what's up there. Violence, desperation, lawlessness.
Everyone wants to save the world, they just disagree on how.
We're gonna get across that wasteland, and we're gonna do it together.
Fallout. All episodes available now on Prime Video.
This is the Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo, giving you the inside track on all the big talking points from Goodison Park.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the latest edition of the Royal Blue Podcast. I'm your host, Conor O'Neill, and I'm delighted to be joined by Chris Beasley, Adam Jones, and Gav Buckland for another bumper show. We've been saying it ever since the season finished, but there really isn't a dull time when it comes to every football club right now, this minute. The season may be over, and Frank Lampard's side may be on their holidays, but there is still plenty going on at Goodison Park, and we have some pretty big news to discuss this afternoon. As I'm sure we're all aware by now, talk continues that Farhad Moshiri could potentially sell Everton Football Club to an American-led consortium led by Peter Kenyon. We'll be getting the reaction from all three of our panel this afternoon on that revelation that dropped last night. We'll also be looking at the transfer window and the links continue with James Tarkowski and Richarlison potentially heading to Spurs. Is one rumour that we saw over the weekend. And we'll also finish up by touching on Billy Bingham, who sadly passed away last week. But there's only one place to start, and as with the big news that dropped last night, that Farhad Moshiri is potentially in talks with a US-based consortium overselling Everton Football Club. It was a pretty, pretty big bombshell news story to drop. The Telegraph first reported it. We obviously backed up it with what we understood. And Adam, I'll come to you. In terms of developments that we didn't perhaps see coming, this was right up there, wasn't it, with the very best?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not going to lie. I think it was just the close proximity with how soon it was after Moshiri put out his open letter to supporters. And he, you know, yeah, as we were talking about on the podcast last time, we were saying just how good it was to see him, you know, admitting his mistakes and reaffirming his commitment to not making the same errors in the future, and, you know, reaffirming his commitment to, well, especially financially in terms of the stadium, but not just that, for the rest of the running of the club as well. So to see reports that he's in positive talks, I think I've seen it described in some places, towards selling the club, it does come as a little bit of a surprise just with the timing of it. Now, I think in a wider sense, you can probably understand the reasons why Moshiri would entertain at least, you know, exploratory talks about this. You know, he's pumped a lot of money into Everton and not got a lot of return. So, you know, he's a businessman at the end of the day. And if he sees an opportunity for him to maybe recoup some of his losses that he's made and move on, and he thinks that that's the right time, then, you know, I can understand why, as a businessman, he'd explore that option. But it just seems a bit of a weird time as a club to be going through something like this, you know, after what was a season of such turmoil, so many changes at loads of levels at the club, you know, right through, you know, the playing squad, the backroom staff, even at boardroom level, there's been huge changes as well. So to come into a summer where all we wanted was, you know, maybe a little bit of stability, to have these sort of reports come in and, you know, and maybe threaten that sort of stability, it strikes me as a little bit strange. But I think it's worth clarifying that, you know, we don't know how far these talks have gone. You know, the term positive talks, I think, is deliberately, you know, quite vague, isn't it? You know, a positive talk could mean literally anything. Like they've maybe had an opening chat about something and they found one sort of level of common ground. That could be absolutely anything. So I don't think it should be read into too much at this stage, if I'm perfectly honest. But, you know, we'll have to see what the coming days and weeks bring. I'm sure there'll be more developments on this sort of scenario. But I just think it's from a club standpoint, I think it's the timing of it for me just seems a bit weird.
Ease, you've just wrote a piece that's going to go on the Echo site as we sit here now on this afternoon and even tomorrow's paper.
Yeah.
Sources close to Farhad Moshiri refusing to rule out a sale. Mm-hmm. He issued an old comment to his good friend Jim White when he was approached by him earlier today. Yeah. This all kind of looks like it's leading more money, doesn't it, Bees? That he is genuinely interested in selling the football club.
Yeah, I think it is a possibility now, as much as 24 hours ago, it would have been a shock to most of us if his old pal Jim's even getting the no comment. In all seriousness, no. There's been opportunities for today for people in the Moshiri camp to sort of knock this one down. Nobody has, as I understand it. Obviously, we've heard in the past that Mr. Moshiri's been looking for external investments in terms of getting the stadium completed. It's a phased funding model, and he's paid for all the initial works to actually get that site. Basically, so he can build a stadium on it. He's funded that himself, in addition to the tune of about $500 million he's already spent on the playing squad at Everton. But it would seem in these various discussions he's had with potential investors in the stadium and just people about coming into the club, that some talks have developed into the prospect of a sale, as Adam has said. At this stage, it doesn't mean that there's anything imminent in any way, but what has happened is that it would seem that these, like I said, the talks have developed from just potential investments to the idea of an actual takeover. And he may seem that the time is right now. Obviously, we've heard about all those losses due to COVID this year, and Mr. Moshiri keeping underwriting all these losses with his continued investments. But just an interesting time, and really, I think it's not just sort of surprised ourselves and the general Evertonian public, the fan base, but maybe people even inside the club are just wondering, because not only, as Adam mentioned, less than a week after he reaffirmed his commitment to the club, it seems obvious that these talks must have been going on before he made that statement. They've not happened like over the weekend since he said that and we've got to this stage. And also, the prospect of that stadium, which I understood, you know, won't be jeopardised regardless of the ownership. Any new owners would have to factor in the cost of that. That in 2 years' time, there's actually the prospect of him making a lot more on the club he was to sell once the new stadium is up and running. So it's curious timing, but like you say, never a dull moment.
The reports on Monday evening from the Telegraph and then backed up by others, including ourselves, revealed that Peter Kenyon was fronting the consortium. It included chief executive of Minneapolis-based Talon Real Estate, Mickey Kaminsky, and American businessman John Thornton, as it was taking advice from US law firm Well Gotzel and Magnus, along with investment specialist Michael Clean. Gav, these talks, the reports, and everything else that's come up with it, in terms of where you sit now as a fan, more than anything, What are your thoughts when you read, you know, who's the consortium type figure looking to buy clubs? Because we've seen this before in football. It's becoming the new kind of trend, isn't it? Consortiums buy football clubs, not one individual.
Yeah. I don't know whether I'm attracted by the fact that there's somebody called Thornton who might take over the Toffees or not, you know. But it reduces everybody's risk, doesn't it, for a start? Yeah. I mean, the growth of American capitalism. I mean, there's two types of owner now, isn't there, really, in football? We're getting to, it's either Middle Eastern ownership or American capitalism. This is in the latter, and they're both coming from different directions in terms of what you want from your football club. So it's just, the amount of Americans' involvement in football now is, I wouldn't say worrying, but they will be for a different type of football going forward, won't we? Because that's where the money's to be made. You know, speaking as a fan, an attraction of some sort of American ownership is growing Everton in the United States for the start. How you do that is a different kettle of fish, of course. So in terms of the group that Kenyon's fronting, it's part of wide descendant football, which is slightly worrying, but you know, that's just the way it is. In terms of change of the owner, if it happens, well, I just think, do you think that far? I was waiting to the end of the season to see whether you stayed up or not before, you know, this announcement, perhaps. As you said, they've been talking for a while, yeah. But maybe those the publication of those conversations were waiting until we secure Premier League safety. So so that's my other thought. And the third thought is really, if you're talking, if Farhad wants to keep his £600 million investments and somebody's got to fund the stadium worth £500 million, it's over £1 billion for Everton, isn't it? It's a lot of money for a club that really has spent most of the last decade in middle ground in the Premier League. And that's the other thing. And it'd be interesting to see what Farhad actually takes for the club. I know obviously he won't take the £1.1 billion. But that's the other thing. I mean, do you think some of this is maybe because obviously we've had all the USM stuff and sanctions and all this, how much his personal wealth is worth? Perhaps he wants the liquid cash. You know, maybe that's come into it. But it just seems an enormous amount of money for a club that's a middle and Premier League club that's got very little opportunities for growth, even allowing for the stadium. And I find it baffling. I'm not saying so. And this is not a criticism of Everton. I personally find it baffling why somebody would want to invest a lot of that amount of money in Everton. Because I don't know where you get the return, to be honest with you. Unless, as I say, unless it's part of the American capitalism view of football and there's an increasing number of owners, they have different plans for the game than what we have at the moment. That's the only thing you can think. And it'd be interesting to see how this plays out within the bigger football picture. Because you're getting this friction at the moment, aren't you? I think going forward between Middle Eastern clubs from the Gulf and American capitalism, those two things may fight against each other. So I think there's a wider footballing context to this, isn't there, really?
The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
This is NASCAR driver Tony Breidinger inviting you to make a pit stop at Raising Cane's for craveable, hand-battered, cooked-to-order chicken fingers.
Chicken up.
Crispy, crinkle-cut fries.
Hot potato coming through.
Buttery Texas toast.
Toast walking.
And secret Cane's sauce.
Topping off now.
Turbocharge your chicken fingers and get them even faster when you order online or with the Raising Cane's app.
Go, go, go!
Raising Cane's chicken fingers. One love. Raising Cane's is not affiliated with NASCAR.
I think in terms of, you know, where Everton find themselves, it reported that talks at a relatively early stage were heads of terms already in place. Obviously, Gav's mentioned there what Farhad Moshiri values the club at. Do you think that's a fair valuation, or, you know, do you think you were with Gav in terms of it's a lot of money to pay for a football club that could potentially offer very little in return?
Yeah, I think generally, like, I'm probably a little bit naive in these sort of terms, but generally, I just don't know. Like, if I was a billionaire, I probably wouldn't be invested in a football club. I don't understand where anybody's getting the return out of it, to be honest. So, especially as Gav rightly says, you know, for a club like Everton, who've been, you know, stagnating at best, shall we say, over the course of the last decade, with years of that as well, to now go on to, I think I'm with Gav. I just don't understand where any potential investor is going to be seeing any sort of huge amounts of return on what they'd put in. But you know, there must be some money in it, like, surely, because you know we keep seeing the owners of these football clubs just seem to get wealthier and wealthier and wealthier. And I've seen, you know, a lot of conversation across social media over the last 24 hours or so has been, you know, around the moral quandary around these billionaires and how they make their money and who they relate to and stuff like that. And, you know, I've seen a lot of people saying, oh, Everton shouldn't be looking for these owners. They should be looking for these owners. And, oh, there's not a perfect billionaire out there. That's just the wider problem in football, isn't it? The fact that football has got to this point where, you know, you can bring up these legitimate questions about, you know, any sort of billionaire that's going to be buying your club. You know, I just think it's getting to the point of ridicule at this point. You know, there's just far, far too much money in the game. And obviously that's not going to change. Like, I think we've well passed the tipping point in this sort of sense, but you know, it's just fast. It's just fast accelerating even further out of the hands of the fans who are meant to be the lifeblood of these football clubs, and it's just in the control of these wealthiest of the wealthy at this point. And you know, I just think, you know, it pains me to have these sort of discussions, and you know, it pains me to see supporters going on about these sort of discussions about which billionaire should own their club. I just find it really disheartening, to be honest. So yeah, sorry to have a little negative impact there, but genuinely, yeah, I just find it sad.
These one important aspect in the piece that you wrote today for the Echo is that, you know, the sources you spoke to close to the club are adamant that regardless of the ownership, the completion of Andy Murdoch should not be compromised, and any interested party wishing to buy the Blues have to factor in the building costs and the stages they're up to. It's absolutely vital, isn't it, that if Farmage does walk away from the club, things are put in place that Bramley Murdoch is completed when it's meant to be completed on time, because Everton can't let this slip away from the fingers, can they, and let politics or potentially anything else get in the way of Bramley Moore being built and playing football in there.
Yeah, I think that's going to be a big concern, isn't it, over these past 24 hours with the supporters, and this just coming out of the blue. It's the stadium. We can all see it actually physically emerging in front of our eyes now. Great progress has been made, and it's coming up to a year now, isn't it, next month, that since they got on site, and now it's been converted actually from a dock full of the water that was drained with all the fluidized sand, it was called, and actually the foundations are complete now. We've even got the four corners in place. So yeah, they've always seemed relaxed, to be fair, on that score. I mean, it still remains to be said whether Farhad Moshiri remains in control, and if he can't get this, what is seen as a perhaps high price for the club, you know, he'd have to stay if the price isn't right. I mean, you do wonder with the timing. Has it come out? Because there have been other reports saying that there could be up to four interested parties. Is the timing at the moment, as odd as it seems, is that to try and flush out other potential bidders? I'm not sure. But they insist that they're comfortable over this. Obviously, there's the deal in place with Lango Rourke that Denise Baxendale got in place there, where so they don't have the problem that Tottenham Hotspur had in terms of escalating costs, which is, to be fair, that can't be sniffed at the moment, given that all our household costs are obviously skyrocketing, and with the inflation over the past year or so, everything going up 25 to 50%. It's a major issue in terms of the steel for the construction. So they've done the best to allay our fears on that respect, that, you know, the stadium is continuing on schedule, and that, you know, any interested party would have to factor that in. And that would be a major, reassuring factor for most supporters, because it's taken so long, it's overcome so many difficulties so far in uncertain times. You know, a global pandemic, which had football played behind closed doors for the first time in 130 years, the fact that there was a breakaway Super League mooted for the Big Six. I mean, it's overcome all these obstacles, significant obstacles, and for it to fall because of some in-house power struggle, for want of a better word, or some takeover bid. They're insisting that won't come into play, and that would be reassuring, because you know that's going to be a big thing for the value of the club going forward. It will make the club a lot more attractive and a lot more valuable in the very near future, which just makes it even more intriguing, I think, really, that if Mr. Moshiri is looking to sell now, why it's come out, and as it's been mentioned already, was it already very much in the pipeline, but has been put back by the uncertainty over the club's Premier League future? Because if they were no longer a Premier League club, and he wouldn't be getting anywhere near this amount, would he? And it'd be a much harder sell to go through with. So, you know, it is intriguing over the timing of it all, but just makes you wonder just how long this has been going on behind the scenes. And of course, the break with his long-time business partner, Mr. Usmanov, because of the Russian sanctions could also ultimately have played a big part in his thinking on this score.
Gav, Peter Kenyon has shown Frank Lampard unknown well from the time of Chelsea. You imagine they've, you know, crossed paths in their time. you know, post Chelsea, even since, you know, the two of them not being involved at Stamford Big Club. But if you're Frank Lampard sitting there right now and, you know, you're reading these reports and these, you know, rumours about a potential sale, what are your thoughts? Because obviously, you know, the transfer window is in full flow. You know, he obviously looking to do business. There's been multiple reports on how many players he wants to bring in. So if you're Frank Lampard now, you're sitting there nervously thinking, well, this is not what I need as I try and, you know, put together a squad that doesn't have the club in a position that I spent a large part of last season in, and that's why I'm fighting relegation.
Yeah, uncertainty and instability at the top of an organisation is never great, is it, really? In terms of the assurances you want as a manager, may take a given Farhad's, shall we say, reputation for meddling in the past, a lack of Farhad meddling in the summer may be taken as a, you know, as a benefit. Yeah, but just generally, that at any sort of time, we're trying to do business at the moment. There's uncertainty at the top of the shop. Absolutely. It doesn't help, really. And I think, you know, so the big, I'm just, I know we're going to talk about selling players. There may be a player that Farhad might say, well, I'd want to sell him. Maybe somebody else might come in as an owner and they'll be like, we don't want to sell him, you know, because he adds value to the brand or whatever. It's a conundrum, isn't it, really? Uncertainty doesn't help, and I'm sure Frank is aware of that, but he'd want some assurances about that this doesn't affect our transfer plans for the summer, which you hope have been well developed since January. But as you say, this doesn't help. It doesn't help in terms of trying to think in cash coming into the business. You know, if you've got to fork out a cash amount for somebody, well, who's going to pay that cash? Farhad wants to go. So, yeah, it doesn't help both financially and in the decision-making for the manager. At the same time, it's in Farhad's best interest if he wants to sell to have a good transfer window as well, doesn't it, really? So, yeah, but it's not for me personally. If I was Frank, I'd be a little bit wary about what's going on.
The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
Sergeant and Mr. Smith, you're going to love this house.
Bunk beds in a closet?
There's no field manual for finding the right home. But when you do, USAA Homeowners Insurance can help protect it the right way. Restrictions apply.
Adam, I think the big thing, and Gav touched on it there at the start of his piece, in terms of the Everton as a football club, the uncertainty this will bring won't help, will it? Because, you know, we've just endured one of the worst seasons I think we can all remember. You know, the Blues survived by the skin of the teeth. You know, okay, that night at Goodison Park, whatever, the Crystal Palace was fantastic. But realistically, Everton shouldn't be in that position where I'm just celebrating and do things, you know, celebrate just about staying up. So in terms of the uncertainty this now brings, it's just another worry, isn't it, for some Evertonians and people at the club as well, because, you know, a new owner comes in, new chief executive potentially comes in, possibly Peter Kenyon, changes are going to be made, and again, things will be start to ripped up and more uncertainty, and people won't know what lies in the future.
I mean, it'd just be nice to have, you know, at least just like 2 weeks where it's just quiet. No, like, I don't think that's so much to ask, is it? You know, everybody's on holiday anyway. Why can't we just have like 2 weeks where something just doesn't whip everybody up into some sort of anxiety? And, you know, this is, I think you're spot on. It does create a certain amount of confusion over what's going to happen in the future. I think, you know, Gav's quite right in the sort of quandary that Moshiri does find himself in terms of his spending over the course of this summer. You know, if he's going to sell, you'd think to himself, oh, he might want to keep as much money as he possibly can and not spend loads in this window. But on the flip side, it is in his best interests to see Everton have a good window and then progress into the future if he doesn't, you know, secure this sale soon and, you know, maybe he wants to sell further on in the future or something like that. So, yeah, it's just yet another period of uncertainty that Everton do find themselves in. And I suppose, you know, you can never predict the future, can you? You know, even in the even in the most ideal of circumstances, you know, something can always come up, you know, akin to Carlo Ancelotti just up and sticks and leaving last summer. That completely came out of the blue, doesn't it? So, as I say, even in the best of circumstances, perhaps you wouldn't be able to tell what's going to happen in the future. And, you know, we've seen a lot of Everton supporters calling for, you know, sort of sweeping changes at the club. And, you know, there might be some supporters who think that this is the right thing for the club to have these sort of, that maybe have this sort of period of uncertainty, have these sort of sweeping changes and see where that takes you in the future. And I don't know about it personally. I just think a period of stability and a period, you know, where you can have, you know, at least let the manager and the director of football, you know, get their feet under the table first and, you know, actually assess what's going to happen in the future. Because at the end of the day, it's the fortunes on the pitch are what we all go and watch the match for, isn't it? Like that's what we all care about, as, you know, as people reporting on the club and, you know, people supporting the club. You know, everybody just cares about them results on the pitch, and, you know, that's going to be highly affected by the kind of work that Lampard and Thelwell are going to be able to do over the course of the coming weeks and months of the transfer window. And if there's a period of, you know, instability and uncertainty over the course of the coming weeks and months, whether you don't know whether Machiri's going to be in a position to invest or this and that and the other, and if ever Everton just didn't need this sort of confusion, I just think that's now. It would just be so much better to have this sort of period of stability for now. You know, we've been saying it on podcasts for, I feel like, weeks now. Just let the manager and the director of football do what they were brought into the club to do. Trust them to do that job, and, you know, see where that takes the club in the future. But, you know, if that's going to possibly be affected by, you know, however many changes there'd be in the boardroom or an ownership change or something like that, then, you know, it's just going to create so much confusion that I think Everton could really do without that at the minute.
I think as well, Bees, isn't it, in the terms of, you know, a potential sale, and if these talks were to progress into something more concrete and, you know, an offer was made, etc. Mm-hmm. These things take time, don't they? They don't just happen overnight, and there's a process that they've got to follow, and, you know, things have to go to the Premier League, etc. So this could be a really long out drawn process, couldn't it, for Everton and the supporters, because it's not just going to wake up one morning Everton or a new owner. This will take time, and that time is precious, isn't it, when you think that Everton's campaign is not that far away from starting.
Yeah, I mean, I remember I was reading a piece today from when Farhad Moshiri took control of the club in spring 2016. Bill Kenwright actually said that he'd been looking at it for 2.5 years before he obviously completed the takeover and became majority shareholder. He said he had to get a feel for the club first. And Mr. Kenwright was saying that Mr. Moshiri actually loved the club by this point, by the time he actually taken control. But, you know, that was 2.5 years down the line from when he'd initially been approached. So yeah, it takes time. Like we said, given Everton's precarious predicament, and that they've finished this season with the lowest equivalent points total in the club's history, joint with 2004, when they also finished on 39 points, they've not got much scope for sort of stagnating and waiting to see how it goes. It's imperative that they do improve this summer. They do make the signings they need to improve that league position for next season. Because if you sort of leave it to its own devices, you go backwards, and there's a genuine potential that you're back in it. Could actually go down next season if you don't get the investment right this summer. So yeah, it's a crucial time, and it could linger on it. Maybe these other groups will come in. They've got wind that Mr. Moshiri is willing to sell up now. So other interested parties might come to the table. And as it's been said already, they might not always be palatable to the fans' tastes. I think the days of, Jack Walker is possibly the last great local owner, you know, a lifelong fan, a local lad made good, who was able to make the dream a reality for his team. Whereas now, who are these people? Why are they coming in? they're not coming in because they, you know, they stood next to Bill in the boys' pen back in the day watching Davy Hicks, and they're there because they're hard-nosed businessmen who want to make a buck at the end of the day. So it's an intriguing set of possibilities that wait at Everton, and it's not necessarily palatable. I mean, who'd have thought I'd been saying this a week ago after all that had been said about Mr. Moshiri's ownership and the mistakes that he's admitted to over this past week, and there've been many over those 6 years. Is it almost a case of better the devil you know? I dare say in that for all the mistakes he has made, we don't know who's coming in at this stage. We don't know what they're going to do or what sort of approach they're going to have. I mean, they could come in as a clean sweep and it could be a lot more efficient. It could end up being a lot better, but you just don't know. I mean, you could say it couldn't get much worse, as seldom as a club spent so much to get so bad. But you just don't know what these people want to do and the way they're going to go about things. Before I finish there, I think it's interesting now Mr. Moshiri he's attended very few matches. He's never been a regular at Goodison, but the fact that he was never back there after the Watford game back in the autumn, you just wonder whether his interest has waned. He's thrown so much money at it. He's sort of been like Randy Lerner, end up at Aston Villa. He spent so much money trying to bridge the gap with the top four, and he found out that no matter how much he threw at it, they weren't getting any closer. So it gets to the point that I'm not going to put any more into this, and it's time to rein things in. You just wonder whether he's come in maybe a bit naive, thinking that I'll sort of spend a few quid here and Everton will sort of be up there with the best of them. And he's found it's a lot more difficult than that, given the way the sport's structured to protect those who are in those positions of strength at the moment.
Gav, just to finish on the takeover stuff and where the land currently lies, sometimes a chain of events can perhaps lead to something that you can picture. And is it safe to say that this year, in terms of the chain of events, in terms of, you know, Moshiri's not being visible at games, he's not watching Frank Lampard's side in action, the Everton team under Frank Lampard play live. You know, it took so long for him to release a statement after the season finished. You know, when a statement come, he kind of admitted his faults and, okay, he stuck his neck out and was committed to the future, but it was kind of very PR.
Yeah.
PR spun, wasn't it? Do you think we've been leading up to this kind of moment now? Do you think events have led to this where we find ourselves? And like B says, this has been coming for a while.
Yeah, absolutely. To be fair, if I'd seen us against Watford, it would have been a long time before I to be honest with you.
He missed the first goal that we scored as well.
Did he? Yeah. And you'd wonder, we've obviously had all the trouble in Ukraine and all this, and he's probably got different priorities as a consequence of that. Yeah, his note was perhaps his little farewell note to supporters. I do think one thing about the timing as well, and it is to do with the chain of events, Connor, is I'm just wondering whether he was spooked by our relegation fight at the end of the season, knowing full well if we'd have gone down, he would have lost 80% of his investment. And I'm just wondering whether he's thinking, I don't want that to happen again. And he's probably thinking, actually, we may improve the team, but there's a possibility that may happen again next season. So I want to avoid that. I want to preserve as much of my investments as possible. And I think in the chain of events, that the relegation fight is probably within there as well in terms of his thinking, because I think it spooked him. So, yeah, the signs of being there, the lack of communication, the lack of attendance at Goodison, we know that he's had other bigger things to think of. Is notes, which, you know, apologising and let's leave it at that. So perhaps the clues have been there. But as Chris said, these things can take time, can't they? You know, so maybe back again at the start of next season before all we know. But yeah, you can see little signs, can't you, over the last 6 months.
Adam, away from all the talk of takeover, and as expected around this time of year, the transfer window gossip is in full swing. One rumour that did emerge over the weekend was Richarlison to Tottenham, a surprise club entering the race for the Brazilian. They can offer him one thing, that is Champions League football, but the numbers that were talked about around that deal just simply don't add up for Everton, do they? If Richarlison does leave Goodison Park, they'll be wanting a lot more than what Tottenham reportedly were prepared to pay for him.
Yeah, I did see these reports over the weekend, and I did see a lot of Everton supporters maybe getting hung up on the wrong thing, and they were debating whether Richarlison would get into the Spurs team or not, and blah blah blah, and that doesn't really concern Everton, does it? I don't think that's the point of all this, is it? It's the price that's getting mentioned, and I think there's a convert of about £51 million is apparently rumored price that has been mooted in some of these reports. It's just not enough. It's absolutely just not enough. Obviously Watford have got a sell on clause. They get 10% of anything over £40 million that Everton will recoup, or would potentially recoup from any sale of Richarlison. So that's got to be factored into of all of this as well. But let's be honest, Everton paid £40 million for Richarlison 4 years ago. How much better of a player is Richarlison than he was 4 years ago? I'd say he's hugely better of a player than he was 4 years ago. I think he's one of the most, if not the most influential player in the Everton squad at the minute. And that with it should command a very sort of hefty transfer fee if Everton are to let him go. I'm not accepting this point that, because Everton are in some sort of financial trouble that they should accept a lower price for him. Don't accept that at all, to be honest. I think if anything that should highlight their need to get as big a price as possible for him, because he's one of our most saleable assets. So we can't be seen to letting him go for what would be perceived on the cheap. We need to try and command the best fee possible. And as we've seen with Tottenham sort of negotiating strategies in the past, they're not the kind of team that's going to overpay for a player. In fact, they much prefer to underpay for most of their transfer targets. So that's the thing that kind of sticks with me about Spurs' potential interest. I don't think they'll be willing to pay the kind of money that Everton are going to want. And I don't think that Everton should budge from the price that they want, especially for the financial position that they're in. Spurs are a team that like to negotiate the price down, and I just don't think that Everton should be in a position to do that, to be honest. So if another club comes in who can offer the right amount of money for Everton, then I think that's something that's got to be explored and considered by those at the club. But if these are only reports as things stand, aren't they, and rumours, but if an offer akin to those reports were to come in for Richarlison, then I think Everton should kind of laugh in the face of it and just move on, to be honest.
The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
These Adams absolutely spot on in terms of the Everton got a whole firm and stand the ground. But I suppose there is a wider picture. These are reports and rumours. But should Everton be braced for offers for a Charleston, do you think, this summer? Do you think because he was so good last season, he was so imperative, and the love he wants and the need he wants for Champions League football, Everton needs to be braced for offers for the star man?
Yeah, I think there's a begrudging acceptance from Evertonians that Richarlison or Dominic Calvert-Lewin might not be there next season. I'm sure most hope that it isn't both. And given that Richarlison's the one who has 2 years left on his contract and Calvert-Lewin is free, you think that Richarlison would be favourite amongst the two to go? We're not privy to these conversations, but
if only was bees.
Yeah, and Michael Ball said to me when we were doing the column the other week, he was surprised that Richarlison was still at the club, to be honest, and that as much as he's a fan's favourite and the supporters love his wholehearted style and the way he wears his heart on his sleeve when he pulls on that royal blue jersey, that it'd come to a point. Everton had just finished 16th. He came to the club 4 years ago with aspirations to lead him in Europe, potentially even perhaps win a trophy with them. It hasn't worked out. That's not Richarlison's fault. He hasn't scored as many goals as we'd have hoped. After, I think he got 13 in the Premier League in both of his first seasons, and it sort of dropped. So was it 7 last year, and then he got up to, was it 10 he finished on this year. But still, like, as Adam has said, the biggest match winner in the squad, the most influential player, they cannot seem to be selling him on for a very negligible profit, which 51.25 million, which is the equivalent of 60 million euros, the quoted price from Brazil. We're saying Tottenham may well be interested, and I think it could actually be sort of a natural fit for him to go play Champions League football for them, attack-minded. But in the same way that Tottenham weren't willing to let Harry Kane go last summer, unless the price was right. If the price had been right, Harry Kane would have gone. He might have been playing for Manchester City now. Maybe Erling Haaland would have never ended up at Manchester City. Price wasn't right. They spent all that money on Grealish instead. They didn't have the price right for Daniel Levy, who we know is, as Adam has alluded to, a very shrewd negotiator. And, of course, why wouldn't you want that at your club? But the price wasn't right, so Kane stayed. So if the price isn't right for Richarlison, and Richarlison stays at Everton, it's as simple as that. I mean, you might say, oh, well, I'm being overambitious, but as a benchmark, I would use the Lukaku fee. He's not as good as Lukaku. He's not as prolific as Lukaku, but that's 5 years on now with inflation. So I would be starting, if Tottenham are starting at 51 or whatever, I'd be starting saying, well, we want more than what we want got for Lukaku, because that was 5 years ago, and that was immediately seen as they were almost undersold. I know there was add-ons as well with that, but didn't the Mbappe transfer, Neymar came straight after that anyway, so that sort of put that into perspective. Be a huge loss for Everton. Those 4 years he's been at the club, as Adam has said, he's developed incredibly. He's a regular for Brazil now. And the fact that even that the World Cup isn't in the summer this year, that sort of throws a curveball, and that normally you'd have that summer tournament, and if he did well for Brazil, that you know, add onto his transfer value, but that's not happening until the winter now. So it's a curious one. I mean, do you risk his contract going down to 18 months? Because there's actually a potential for him to sort of be put in the shop window in the World Cup finals. So it's a tough one, but yeah, certainly I think Everton should be expecting a significant profit on Richarlison if he does go this summer.
Gav, not for 1 minute do we want Richarlison to leave Everton in the summer. You know, everyone loves him, fans, players. You know, Frank Lampard, you can see he's got a lot of love for him as well. But if he was to depart, it's going to be a big ask, isn't it, for Everton to find someone to come and fill his boots, because he's not just become a fan's favourite, but he puts his heart and sleeve and he gives 100% every week, and without him, you know, he played a massive part in even getting Everton over the line to survive relegation.
Yeah, I mean, as I'd said, he's a different player than what he was when he joined the club. He's just improved as a player, but you can see in his attitude, he has, said many times on the pod, you get the impression that his mindset is slightly different to virtually every other player in the squad, that he thinks differently. Dare I say, he wants it more. And if you're a top club, that's what top players are like, aren't they? And I think that's just one thing he's also proved since he joined in 2018, whatever it was. So that makes you think that his value is a lot more than what's being quoted. But it's one thing to place him on the pitch, but he's sort of in that Tim Cahill, Duncan Ferguson mode now, isn't he? Of relationship with fans and being the fans, you know, talisman for the team. And that's the other thing you've got to replace, haven't you? So there's two things there for me that I think has been a challenge for Lampard as a manager.
Adam, in terms of the transfer window and where Everton currently stands in terms of, you know, transfers and gossip, are you a little bit surprised the Blues haven't been linked at more players? Is it played out how you expected to play out? You know, obviously this is the first time we've seen Kevin Farwell and Frank Lampard in action. Mm. Was you expecting maybe a little bit more, seeing from the Blues side and getting people out?
Sort of a slower start to the transfer window, because you know, at the end of the day. I think while there will have been conversations between Lampard and Thelwell in this sort of sense over the latter stages of the season, obviously Lampard's main aim will have been just keep the side in the Premier League. So, you know, he will have been no doubt looking at transfer targets, but at the end of the day, it's hard for Everton to have made any sort of early moves in that sense when they don't know what division they're going to be playing in the next season. So, you know, Everton have only been assured of that for the last few weeks. So I'm not really surprised to see, you know, what amounts to a little bit of a slower start to the transfer window. I'm not particularly concerned about it. You know, as long as Thelwell and Lampard have, you know, keep speaking to each other, they've got their plan in place. Yeah, I'm trusting them to just to do their jobs and see the transfer window through properly.
Just before we finish, there was some incredibly sad news last week that Billy Bingham, a former Everton player, Championship winner and manager, had sadly passed away. Gav, as someone who, you know, chronicles the history of Everton and is a fountain of all knowledge, should we say, Bingham was a one-off.
Oh, isn't that a nice way of putting it?
Yeah.
Bingham was a one-off, wasn't he? A Championship winner and a manager. Not many do that for the Blues.
No. Howard, famously. But I think he... Yeah, Billy, strange. He sort of filled the gap between Harry Catterick and Gordon Lee's early years, which were very fondly remembered. Former player, as you say. I suspect that's why he got the job, because his managerial pedigree ran Southport, Plymouth, a couple of clubs in Ireland, Greek national team. So he didn't have any first-division experience when he took over. He liked defensive, safety-first football. His defence is to be well-organised. In the mid-70s, that was a really good thing, because it was near a defensive football. Brought Bob Latchford to the club. Nearly won the title in 74-75, but in the truth, wasn't good enough. Then he fell out with some of the players, some of the squad, and then he fell victim, I think, for some of the boardroom dysfunction at Everton in the mid to late 70s, and he was eventually sacked in early 1977, when he'd just been given the money to sign two players, then sacked them, which is not necessarily something that's happened since in a January to any recent managers I can think of. It only goes to show that history does have a habit of repeating itself. But yeah, I think he did the best he could at Everton, but it unfortunately wasn't good enough. And as I say, the boardroom wasn't great. Afterwards, of course, he's mainly remembered in football as, you know, he's one of the great British national team managers, getting Northern Ireland to the World Cup twice. Their victory over Hull Spain in 1982 is still probably the best result by a British country at the World Cup. Got them through to the second round, qualified again in 86. 84 European Championships, they beat West Germany home and away. Northern Ireland, you know, only lost out marginally to qualifying and beating, going above West Germany in their group. So, yeah, he was his tactics is safety first, his emphasis on physical fitness and all that type of stuff was far more suited to being an underdog at an international level than being an Everton manager. And that's what I'd be remembered for. But as I say, always sad that any hater when an Everton manager leaves the club, but when a manager passes away, I think that's 3 in 12 months, isn't it? Is even more sad than I'm afraid. So, yeah, it was sad news, but albeit Billy was 19, he'd had a long and productive life.
Right, gents, we will leave things there, as Phil Kirkbride would say. I think we've chewed the fat enough today. We will be back next week with another episode, unless things develop over the coming days, both in the transfer world and the takeover world, then we will be back to bring you all the latest with that. But if not, we'll be back next week to talk more about Everton Football Club and the goings-on at Goodison Park. But for today, thanks to Gav, Adam and Chris for joining me. You've been listening to the Royal Blue Podcast.
You've been listening to the Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.